Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well.
This is the first time Sarah and I, as we were recording this, have seen each other for
2 weeks.
I feel like I saw you maybe last week.
Oh, the Shure. Yeah, Cheers.
Oh, yeah. That was last week. So we hope everyone's doing well and that, you know, everyone's remaining safe, staying safe, doing all the things they need to be doing, but still hopefully safely interacting with people. We're big proponents of that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into Peek and Pit and our interview, we wanted to remind everyone about BetterHelp, who is a sponsor of this podcast. You've probably heard of BetterHelp. They are an online counseling service, constantly adding new counselors because it's been a really difficult year, been a really difficult time. And if you're looking for a mental health professional to speak with virtually, BetterHelp has thousands of options and they'll help you find someone right for you. Go to betterhelp.com/itsfine for 10% off your first month of service. That's betterhelp.com/itsfine.
Lovely.
Beautiful.
So Peek and Pit?
Yeah, I can start because okay. I thought of mine. So my pit was, I had just like a really busy week. It was like juggling between work and then like other work, like just different types of work that I was doing. So it was really hectic, but it was contained, which was good. Like I knew that it would be over, which is a good kind of busy, I think, because it's like there's a finish line. So that was Pittsville, but fortunately we're recording on a Friday. So, and then my peak was, I told everyone who listens that I have been teaching this summer and I finished teaching today, but yesterday the kids I was teaching were having like a big ceremony and they did that thing on their cameras where they turn off their cameras and then they turn on their cameras and they all had like thank you cards for me, which was like, if you watch my Instagram stories or know me, you know, that's like, I'm a big sucker for those videos. So the fact that they did that was very, very moving.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Anyone who follows Liz knows that like those thank you things are literally like, you've been posting those from TikTok for the last year.
Since COVID started.
Yeah. Like you are the number one fan of those types of thank you. So that was just unbelievable to see. All right. My pit is that I honestly, like, it's not a pit because I've just also been so busy that it's like been good. Like I'm doing really well, but I've been so busy that I haven't had any time for self-care.
And
I'm just feeling like really run down and I can't wait for this weekend. We're recording on a Friday because I need it. Like I just need rest. I actually napped for 2 hours today.
Good. I was going to suggest it, but I didn't want to stress you out and be like, I simply can't.
Yeah. So it's just been a really, really busy time. But anyway, my peak is that I went to LA for work and it was really fun. And it was my first time going to LA for a shoot, a commercial shoot, and learned a lot. And it was a really cool experience. So that was my peak.
Exciting things coming. I don't know what that is. It must be someone else's. You know what it is? Someone else's air conditioner leaking on your air conditioner.
Okay. That's my pit, everyone. I'm changing
the sound. They probably don't hear it. I was going to say, hopefully it's a tremendously large ad campaign and everyone will be so excited about it. And then you'll be like, yeah, I did that.
Yep. I hope so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our guest for today is my friend Ariella. She is a therapist. I know Ariella from the Jewish community that I belong to on the Upper East Side of New York City. I met her by going to services on Saturday mornings for Shabbat. And we just became friends. She has such good energy. She's so sweet. Like she's such a light. Every time she walked into services, I was like, like she's just so cool. And I wish she was my therapist, but she can't be because she's my friend. And I love my current therapist. But yeah, she's really, really great. And, you know, oh, and she's here. So we'll
finish after.
Finish later. Hi. Welcome to the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. You know, it's so funny. So we were doing a little intro before this and I was talking about how we met at like Shul And how every time I saw you, she's like, I love the name of your podcast. It's okay. I'm fine podcast.
Yeah. You did tell me that story.
I've been so funny. Like, it's fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. No, it's just so funny. She's like, it's okay. I'm fine.
No,
I'm
she's like, I love the name. It's okay. I'm doing totally great. Yes! Like,
it was so funny. It was so cute. But anyway, welcome. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, please do.
Yes, please. Okay. So it's nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. It's fine. I'm fine. Did I get it right? I'm fine.
Yes, you did.
I love it. It is such a genius name for a podcast. So my name is Ariella Azaroff. I am a licensed clinical social worker. I have a private practice here in Manhattan, where I love millennials. I love the emerging adult, the kind of like leaving childhood, trying to take ourselves seriously, navigating the world, navigating relationships, creating our whole new identity of self. I specialize in anxiety and depression, and I have a special focus on self-acceptance.
I specialize in that too. No, I'm kidding.
Me too.
Like, personally.
Why do you think I specialize in it, right?
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you. No. And I have a unique focus on viewing ourselves through the lens of self-acceptance. So while moving through struggle and trying to figure out, you know, where we want to land professionally, or, you know, trying to navigate dating and boundaries with peers and boundaries with family members, viewing it from a lens of self-acceptance. So really getting to know all parts, the good, the bad, and ugly, and really embracing all of that in your journey of healing or in trying to really get to know yourself. And I also work at Manhattan Day School with middle school kiddos during the day. So that's my full-time job. And then I'm in private practice 2 evenings a week.
I have so many questions. So how long have you been doing both of those things?
So I went to Hunter for my social work degree. And
so did Alana.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Our friend Alana also got her LCSW at Hunter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So post my master's degree, for 8 years, I worked in the ultra-Orthodox, more Hasidic population, mostly with teens at risk. And once I kind of accumulated my hours towards my LCSW, my clinical, I've been working at the school. I think I'm going into my 5th year, and I've had my private practice for almost 6.5 years now.
Wow.
So I've been in the field for about 13 years.
Wow. So it's an individual private practice. Like, you, like, people come to you and you alone. You don't work with other people. You don't have like a business of people. Got it. So then how do people find you? Is it kind of word of mouth? Do you have a website? Like, what's your outreach like?
Yes. So it's interesting. COVID kind of flipped everybody's world upside down. So before COVID, I had a website. Website is like so old school now, right? I do have a website. It's also word of mouth. I run I love connecting people. So I run a few professional kind of group peer supervisions with other therapists in the city, where we come together without saying names to discuss cases and give each other kind of feedback on the cases that we treat. I also run a WhatsApp group of different therapists in schools and the Jewish schools. So it's also word of mouth, but since COVID, I've started an Instagram page, where I put my heart and soul into it. Every post is from like a sincere place. And I post every day. I do reels. I like to go Instagram live with fellow therapists to talk about so many different topics. So I think Instagram has been a huge piece kind of to my practice and getting your style out there. You know, you get a really good sense. It's the best place to shop for a therapist.
What is your style of therapy, by the way?
It's a good question. I use a lot of CBT, so cognitive behavior therapy. So I explain it best as a triangle. So understanding how our thoughts affect how we feel and how we feel affect how we behave. So I use a lot of that kind of to look at our thoughts. But I think a lot of times people want a lot of skills, right? You want to leave therapy with skills, especially I think moving through the global pandemic when things were really stressful. People want skills. So I do a lot of dialectical behavior therapy skills, how to regulate ourselves emotionally for interpersonal effectiveness. So a lot of different skills on how to kind of create boundaries with our peers and a lot of different acronyms that DBT has. I've been doing a lot of that. And I do a lot of mind-body as well. So my mode of practice is really being embodied. So really understanding, I always say, like, our body holds the score. So really trying to connect where we're feeling tension in our body and what that's coming to tell us, right? Because we can kind of be running through our lives with these knots in our shoulders and a lump in our throat, you know, in different places in our body symbolize different emotions that we're kind of holding on to that we need to release to really live our happiest and most authentic life.
For sure.
This is a loaded topic, and like, you mentioned that you work with the Hasidic and ultra-Orthodox community. I kind of want to know about that. And A, like, if you're still primarily focused on people in that community, and B, how you felt like the scope of the mental health conversation changing in what is otherwise like a pretty traditional community. Like, I always say that Judaism is always evolving, and we've learned so much about how the Orthodox community has really like embraced learning about mental health more. But I really want to know from like a therapist's perspective and a Jewish person's perspective, like how that experience was for you. And also, I asked at the beginning, but still want to know if that's still your focus group.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, in my private practice, I see everybody, Jewish, non-Jewish, religious, non-religious, spiritual, not observant, all of it. It does not make a difference to me. I think a lot of times people that want somebody that understands their world, I myself am observant. It's an understanding. It's kind of like a mutual understanding of what their lifestyle entails. So a bunch of my clients are more modern Orthodox, like observant in the modern world. But it's not my primary focus. Wow. Well, I haven't been working. The school I work at is also a modern Orthodox school. It's not Hasidic. It's Orthodox, but it's very modern in the sense that
right.
It's not Hasidic or secluded. But, you know, years ago when I worked in the more Hasidic community, you know, 2 days a week, I worked in Borough Park in a very Hasidic school, and I ran a satellite clinic from the Jewish board. So the Jewish Board of Family and Children Services, right, is a huge mental health clinic. They have different branches all over. And my primary job was to destigmatize mental health and also to create awareness. So not only was I doing counseling with the kids, but I was also doing a lot of professional development with the teachers to really educate them about bullying and how to respond to a child who's been through trauma. And I think there's been a lot of movement, but it's very challenging. There's a lot of core beliefs mm-hmm. that have to be debunked and educated, I like to say. You know, it's a kind of like a place of restriction that they need to be more expansive in the way they think.
Right. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Sarah has heard this a million times, so I'm sorry. And our listeners have too. But my parents are from Borough Park, and they actually lived there like when it was not Hasidic. Like, there were Hasidic Jews. You go there and I feel like it pretty much is fully Hasidic. And we actually had my mom on the podcast, and her brother back in the 70s died by suicide. And a lot of her reflection was like how it was very, very taboo in the world, but also in her community. And now I like, even it's an interesting dichotomy, because on the one hand, like, the world has become more understanding of mental health, but that community has become even more, at least the makeup of that community has been made up of more Hasidic people than it was when my parents were growing up. So it's just interesting to hear like your perspective as someone who's now working in that community. Cause I know from my mom's experience, how difficult it was and how she had to like totally learn about mental health on her own. And I don't want to like paint with a broad sweeping brush that like religious Jewish people don't believe in these things, because so many of them do. But it's just interesting to try and integrate these like otherwise new ideas into a traditional community.
But I think it's important to note that I don't work in that community now. I do right. have some clients in my private practice who are Hasidic, and I do a lot of trauma work with Amudim, which is an amazing organization, a referral center for adults who have been abused and are looking for trauma work. So I do have a few Hasidic clients, but I no longer kind of work in that community. Right. I think it's important to kind of filter out that like Hasidic, religious Judaism, right? There's so many mm-hmm. different sects. I don't even like labels. I say labels get moldy. I think like to be an authentic, you know, God-loving, God-fearing Jew is incredible. But there's so many different styles and flavors. But I think for sure in the modern Orthodox community, you know, there's a lot of talk. There's so many podcasts out now that rabbis who are also therapists are coming out and speaking about a lot of different topics. But I think there's been a lot of movement also in the Hasidic community, you know, through these different mental health clinics that I think there's more access to help.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And then when there's access to help, there's less shame connected.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right.
There's a few and far, you know, I actually am thinking of a family who, their daughter, I ran, it's called Project Extreme, Camp Extreme. It was a camp for teens at risk. And there was a girl who had come on the program and she overdosed and she committed suicide, I think a few years later. And this mom now comes out and she talks to a lot of families who have moved through similar things. So there isn't shame connected. And there's this kind of shared vulnerability and shared compassion because they get it. And I think they're trying to create more awareness also about addiction.
Right. And I think like, well, I have questions as well, but I just wanted to add to that and say that, I mean, I can assume that it must be tough when in communities, well, let alone in the world, but also in specific communities that don't necessarily speak about mental health, you must have seen a lot of people who came to you and I guess felt like they didn't actually need therapy. I feel like I see that all the time.
Or they didn't even have, but they didn't even have like the language to necessarily communicate what it was that they were experiencing. I feel
like. Right, right. I mean, that is fairly new for the world in general. Like people Definitely. Acknowledging that they have anxiety, people acknowledging that they may be depressed. Like this is fairly new language to even be saying out loud. Right. But I feel like you must have, especially with teenagers, maybe they weren't aware of what was on. Did you see that a lot? And I'm not even talking about the fact that they were religious, but just working with teens at risk, you must have seen a lot of teenagers who may have not been aware of what was happening to them.
Yes. Yes. I think a lot of times what drives the risk, right? We always want to understand like what's the function behind the behavior? Like what's driving the at-risk behaviors, whether it's, you know, intense self-harm or alcohol or drugs or, you know, provocative, you know, promiscuous sexual, you know, there's a lot of different parts that drive it. And a lot of what was underlying was abuse, was unhealed, unresolved, unspoken trauma that they've been through. And I think initially, a lot of times when they would come to therapy, there's so much shame connected, you know, shame from the family or shame from either they've been kicked out of many schools, you know, and they haven't found their place. And there's just shame connected to their narrative. But once they ultimately get to therapy and we're able to kind of reduce the shame and help them understand what's driving the behaviors, you know, once you kind of label the trauma, you know, and they create this, they establish like a safe relationship and there's a rapport between the therapist and the teen at risk. I think it's so corrective in itself, you know, because you're taking the shame away and you're helping them kind of put into a box and understand like, why am I behaving this way? Of course you're behaving way.
Right.
Look what you've moved through, you know, or think about the dysfunctional home you've come from. So I think once there's a place of curiosity and understanding, you're able to really kind of acknowledge and accept this is why I'm struggling. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Definitely.
And I just want to reiterate, because I know we're in a very complicated time right now in the world where the Netflix special just came out and people might have some thoughts about religious Jews. And I want to reiterate a million times that what you see on Netflix does not speak for everybody. It's not everybody's story. And the way we're speaking about Hasidic Jews, it's not coming from a place of, I don't want to help my kids, because so many of them want their kids to be happy, have such good hearts. But I come from a very traditional household where my parents are immigrants and we weren't religious, but even in my house, therapy wasn't, it was super taboo when I was growing. It's not necessarily a testament to like who the person is or like who these groups of people are. We don't want to group people together. We just are saying that in some more traditional communities, it's a little bit harder to have conversations about therapy when these conversations are fairly new and modern. I just wanted to reiterate that because
and also reiterating too, like there's, with the Netflix special that Sarah and I have a lot of thoughts about that we won't get into, but like this is
another podcast,
right?
Another episode.
Like
this
is also an issue that plagues tons of different communities. Like we've had a lot. We had a black therapist on our show, and we had a black man come on our podcast recently, and they talked about how like there is a hesitation in a lot of parts of the black community to like mental health, or like it's really not a it's not just like a traditional or observant thing by any means. In fact, there's a lot of observant people who clearly like are very invested in mental health. So it's just a matter of like mental health is new. And so inevitably it's going to sweep, like it's going to come into every community different way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know what I always say, and I use a spiritual perspective with a lot of my clients, is that I say that the healthiest people go to therapy, right? Because they know that they don't have all the tools. They know that they need help with the tools. And I say, you know what? God created these people, right, to be vessels of which to get you the help, right? So if you believe in God and you have that common value, right, because a lot of behavior-based change is based on core values, you know? So when you share that core value and you speak their language, I say, you know what, Hashem or God created this position for me to help you work through this. So I think it's kind of shifting viewing therapy as a weakness. Oh, I don't have all the skills, or it's a weakness. I need help from someone else, right? When you have strep throat, you go to the doctor. When you have COVID, you go get a COVID test, right? Like we're trying to just kind of normalize it, right? We just have to normalize the conversation that you need some skills to get through this. And that's not full of shame, right? You want to, I say therapy helps you kind of get through life cleaner. You know, you can continue on in this way of sinking in shame and sinking in, why do I need help? You know, I have one woman I work with in chiropractic. She is Hasidic. She comes from tremendous, a lot of sexual abuse. And she has 14 kids and she has like 15 grandkids. And she always, what we had to work through, we've been working together for a year now, and she's made tremendous progress doing the trauma work and healing her life. And in the beginning, few months, not even a few sessions, was really just around understanding that you are a warrior. I tell her, you are a rock star. You had 14 children, 14 births, like you are a warrior woman. I said, this is a whole different skill set. Like this doesn't take away that you are strong and you are capable. This just, you've been through something that is not your fault and you need help working through it. And it's been quite amazing to work with her and work through that. It helps you evolve, you know, to a more expansive place.
I think I have like Olympics on the brain, but it reminds me too of like, you don't get to be Simone Biles or like, Simone Biles is another great example because she's been talking about mental health, but any amazing athlete without like having coaches, like you become a better version of yourself when you ask for help. Like it's an accepted phenomenon in like every industry, except it's still kind of not quite accepted in the mental health realm. So however you need to think about it, like going to therapy is 100% a strong move.
Yeah, I do think we're making moves. I am seeing in the wellness community on Instagram just how incredible it is and how many more therapists are logging on and spreading their awareness or their different styles or their posts. Do you guys see that? I do think that it's becoming more and more normalized.
Definitely.
I think also like Sarah and I, a lot of the time on our Instagram, we post like funny memes about mental health. And even though that's a very like I don't want to say surface casual. Layer, but it's like, casual. But even that, I think, really gets people talking. Like today, someone wrote in on our stories, like, I started taking Zoloft and I like replied and was like, join the club, like, welcome to the club. Because the more you start like talking about it and just making it a casual part of conversation, even though these can be very, very heavy topics, the more people are like, oh, wait, this is really normal.
Right. We're not just reposting funny memes about mental health just to have content. Like the whole point is let's keep. And, you know, I receive so many responses from random people being like, oh my gosh, this is so me. And it's like, it's making light of something that so many of us are going through, which I know if there's a time to laugh and then there's a time to actually be serious. But sometimes it's okay to just casually laugh about things because it helps people feel less alone. And then people who might feel like they're the only ones going through something, suddenly they're scrolling on Instagram and they're like, oh my gosh, like I am going through this, you know?
That's what actually Kristen Neff, have you guys read her book on self-compassion?
No.
Sorry, you're going to borrow it after me. I told you about it.
Oh, yeah.
Brene Brown talks about her all the time. And she talks about that self-compassion, the way to have compassion for self is that when you connect to somebody who also struggles with that very same thing. You know, so when you connect to somebody who is honest with you about their struggle, right, then you have compassion for yourself, like, oh, wow, they're also struggling. you know, I have a client I love. She's 28. She just went on vacation with her friends and we were scheduling the next session. And she said, you know, we're all going to Puerto Rico. And we all kind of said, like, wait, guys, like, are we scheduling therapy this week? It was like so normalizing that they were all trying to figure out, like, what are we doing that day? Are we all going to have our own space? You know, and it was kind of like a communal, oh, we're all in therapy. How cool.
You know, I had a very similar experience. I'm working with two girls around my age this summer, and we had to like schedule a meeting together. And we, two of them realized they had therapy at the same time during the week. And I was like, okay, phew, like I can do this time because I don't, it really is true. I think especially another generalization that I don't want to generalize, but from my experience, like it's really more common, I think, around women. I mean, I am a woman, so I can only speak as a woman, but also part of what Sarah and I do is to try and talk to men about it. And oh, that was another question I had is, do you speak to, like, do you have any male clients and how has that looked for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I do have male clients. I mostly see women. But right now, yeah, I actually have two clients that are male. You know, it's interesting. One is more of the demographic that I treat, kind of like the 20s, 30s, emerging adults. And it's very interesting from his perspective. We work a lot on his self-esteem around dating. And what's interesting is when I meet with all my woman clients, you know, that work through being ghosted or, you know, attachment styles, like men struggle with that too. It's very interesting. Sometimes, you know, as women, we give the guy, sometimes I notice like the guy has the balls in his court, you know, and, mm-hmm. and you're kind of trying to take the back seat. But I think what's interesting in working with men is that they struggle with very similar things, right? Attachment styles is from when we're, I talk about attachment styles often. I know Sarah, we had a whole long conversation.
We talked about it for like 2 hours.
Men struggle too. It's very interesting. It's very interesting to treat both.
I talk about this with Sarah a lot because I, even though I've had a long-term boyfriend who's like extremely, like such a mensch, very kind, so respectful, I still, in my head, I'm like, yeah, men are not like this. Like men, not that they're bad, but that I never think that they like have these deep feelings. Like I feel like it's such a female thing and it's so obviously not, but it's just interesting to hear, especially from a therapist perspective, like what's going on in those heads, because I think it feels like such a different conversation, but in many ways it's the same.
I think also many of them want to speak about mental health or, and this is a generalization, but you know, one time we had a man, we had a pretty famous, well-known guy come onto our podcast as a guest and he spoke about his mental health. And we received like so many messages after that from men saying, I didn't know it was okay for me to speak about this. I didn't know other people were experiencing this. I'm looking into therapy. So it's not, I don't want to generalize men, but in general, it's even more taboo amongst the male culture to talk about this stuff. And it doesn't mean they're not going through it. It's just more taboo.
You know, and it's interesting. I tell this one of the men I treat is single and I tell him your future wife will thank you that you've
committed so true.
Time to being so right. We can move through life being so emotionally asleep, men and women, just so disconnected, so kind of numb in a sense of not reactive. Or you could be emotionally awake of, oh my gosh, like I really like that girl and she didn't want to go out with me again. And that hurt. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make me less masculine for having emotions. That makes me emotionally awake to the world around me.
Totally.
I think that's also a huge myth we need to debunk as well.
Uh-huh. And as a woman in the dating world, if a man tells me that he's thought about his mental health, he's even like, if he's been to therapy, I am like way more attracted to that because I'm like, you've thought about this? Like, okay, let's go on another date.
That's also, think about it, when you're building a relationship, that's a core value. Therapy, right. Mental health and checking yourself is a core value. So for sure you find that attractive, right? Or for sure you find that, you know, intellectually stimulating that you check yourself. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Something I really wanted to get into today, because, you know, we've spoken to other therapists. Obviously, you are unique in your own way. But one thing that makes you even more unique than other or even more different than other therapists we've had on the podcast is the religious background. And I want to talk a little bit more about that because I'd love to know how religion has helped your own mental health and also with your clients who are observant. how you use religion to guide them through. So obviously this might not apply to every listener, but it is unique from your story, like your point of view and your perspective is unique. So we'd love to hear about that.
Yes. Yes. I'd love to talk about that. So I would even add on religious and / spiritual. So somebody listening who's also spiritually connected, you know, but maybe not observant in all the different rules, I think that my style can connect as well. So I think that's interesting, Sarah, because I also, for many, many years, I taught downtown at an organization called Maor Manhattan, which is incredible. It was basically a cool center for young professionals to learn different Jewish classes. And I gave a class on meditation. It was very, very interesting. So I'd combine psychology and spirituality. So Sarah, to answer your question, there's two parts. So one part, I love this question. It's great. One part, you know me. One part is how has religiosity framed my own mental health? Was that one of it? Mm-hmm. So I think that I've always been a very spiritual person. It's a lens that I've tried to attain. And as I evolve and as I become different versions of myself, you know, I want to continuously try and be spiritually conscious. So really having this framework of, you know, the world happening for you instead of the world happening to you. You know, when you move through trauma or you move through difficulties and struggles, it's easy to have a victim mentality, right? Like, oh my God, this happened to me. Like, oh, you know, and then you kind of like take on that narrative and that becomes your story. Right. But when you switch and you're like, this happened for me. Right. Like this unfolded in my journey to teach me something significant and to shape me in a different way. So I think when I keep that perspective for my own mental health, it really helps me view the world as the world happening for me. You know, even if you move through trauma or difficult things, what have you learned from this? Or how has this changed you? Or how have you grown? Obviously, sitting in the pain and riding the pain and acknowledging, but understanding, okay, what am I going to take from this? This has to teach me some type of lesson. You know, and a big thing I say to my clients a lot is I give thanks. It's a mantra. I give thanks to help already known on its way. Right? That there's help coming on its way, but we're not sure what it is. So kind of tapping into and letting a journey unfold, because we get so anxious when we try to attain control. We just have to know what happens. We have to know how the story is going to end, right? We want that crystal ball. But when we take a step back and we release, you know, let go and let God is kind of cliche, but in a genuine sense of kind of like not needing to figure it all out. Here I am, putting into the universe, putting into God, whatever it is you believe in, of just this release of here I am. I am going to put out my best energy. I'm going to be the best version of me. I'm going to check myself in therapy. And I'm going to move through life with an expansive heart. And people that come along in your journey are there for a reason. You know, I've met Sarah in this new community I moved into, and everybody I have met is exactly matches, not everybody, hold on, that's an exaggeration. A lot of incredible people I've met match yeah. energy, right? It's like, oh my gosh, these are people I need right now at this time. So when you have that lens and that perspective, you function from a much more expansive and open place to have a more spiritual lens.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say that, because I think a stereotype or like a belief held about people who are observant is that they are closed off to things, because observance into like the secular or like non-religious or non-observant world is seen as like adhering to certain traditions and therefore like shutting yourself off from certain other parts of the world. But in reality, it's like, it's such an interesting way to talk about it, because you're really kind of expanding the way that you think about things. So I just never thought of it that way. And I think it's a really good picture to paint for, especially, I don't think we have many closed-minded people listening to our podcast, but nevertheless, the message that like having a level of observance or spirituality actually opens doors as opposed to closing them.
Well, I think within the framework, you know, as I try to be an observant Jew, there are some guidelines. If you keep kosher, right, you can't eat at every restaurant. Or if you keep Shabbat, like you're unavailable from a certain time. And there is a certain, I would say it's kind of like a boundary of protection, right, that you kind of are keeping your tradition of what feels, this is a whole nother conversation. But I think in sometimes that can kind of be perceived as separate because there are certain restrictions. Does that make sense? But not, yeah, not closed off to people that are different. No, I think a huge, you know, I grew up very connected to Chabad. I think a very big, I know Sarah too, I think a big message in the Chabad world is outreach, is to like engage and help people understand. But I wanted to clarify in my practice, I don't go to a religious space unless my client wants to go there, right? Mm-hmm. So they come in and they say, I want to work with you because I know you're observant. I know you get my world. They may not be spiritual, right? So I have to kind of check in if that's their language. I can't put on them my perspective. Right. I do think more from, you know, people word of mouth, or they see my writing, they are attracted to my style because that's their language, right? But I start where the client's at. And, you know, I have some clients that are very spiritual and they aren't observant. But that lens and kind of understanding their energy and how things unfold, that's kind of a, that's like a shared language.
Right. It's so true that there are so many different layers, and you can be an observant Jew or any other religion, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're spiritual, or you don't necessarily have to be Jewish. But I know a lot of people have spirituality in some sense where they believe in the universe or whatever it may be that they believe in. But that does help guide them through their mental health as well, just because they look at it from a spiritual lens, even if it's not Jewish. So yes, it's so true that there are so many different like layers and styles. I myself feel like I'm very spiritual. The observance is like super new to me, but the spirituality has always been there. So like I really resonate personally with people who help me understand like why something's happening to me, or like even shaping my mindset to see everything that happens to me as on purpose and something good's going to come of that. Even let's say, even if it doesn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out, just having the mindset constantly thinking about things being the best for me, even if I can't see it, has helped me accept what is going on in my life. And lessened my mentality of why is this happening to me. I've never heard anyone say that, but actually once you said it, I was like, that's exactly like what I strive to do personally, is change it from why is this happening to me to why is this happening for me, and just always trying to look at the good in what's going on around me.
And I think especially with young professionals and millennials, right? Anyone really, but sometimes things can feel chaotic, right? Like a fight with a roommate or an intense breakup, or you get into a really hard, you know, fight with a coworker or a boss, whatever it is. And something I talk about a lot is that sometimes kind of the universe has to blow something up so big that it kind of looks like chaos, but it's in your favor, right? So that blow up with the roommate, perhaps you guys were difficult roommates to begin with, and this is forcing you to kind of make a move, you know, or a blow up with a coworker. Perhaps the dynamic was toxic and now there's a separation. So kind of seeing things that feel chaotic as really working in your favor.
Right. That's so interesting, because it's like if you don't have a really intense fight with a boyfriend or like a really intense situation with somebody, you might carry on in a relationship that's otherwise unhealthy or like needs to be healed. But if it breaks or like there's some major dysfunction, it forces you to look at things differently. So I never thought about it that way. And that's a great message for everybody.
For everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we've got, right? Like all we have is the way that we're going to interpret. Like the world is made up of so much material, right? Like there's so much raw material. You leave your apartment and there you go. Your day is starting, right? There's material being drawn before you every second. So it's really about how you are, what your perspective is on the material being thrown at you.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No, that's interesting. I think, well, one thing we ask usually therapists in general, but I think we sit in a very interesting moment right now because, you know, Sarah and my last few episodes were about like the world healing and all that. And now, you know, there's just so much chatter now about like a new wave. And I don't want to give people anxiety about listening to this, but I guess my question would be, what advice might you give to the young professional or millennial who listens to this podcast, who's like, what the heck is going on right now?
First of all, radical genuineness. I sit with you in it.
Yeah.
I think part, I know that wasn't your question, but part of COVID, I think, has brought out such a human understanding, even as a therapist, you know, that like I'm moving through it with you, right? Like the trauma that unravels as COVID unraveled, like I was in it with you of like this uncertainty. So my first message would be, I feel you, I see you, I'm with you. I think, you know, trigger warning, the Delta variant, and, you know, I was just at the gym this morning and on a machine, and on every single different channel, it's like talking about this. It's so anxiety provoking. I think the first thing would be to stay informed to an extent, right? I think that we can all become like obsessive, right? Of like, what does the CDC say now, right? And that kind of behavior wasn't working for us. Like when COVID first hit, like it kind of was, right? Were you there? That was totally me, like kind of updating and getting these texts. And I'm like, okay, hold on. Like how do I press stop to these texts? Like this isn't helping me to obsess and to, it's not going to help. So for sure to stay informed, you know, but also to catch yourself. Like when am I going above what's normal, right? Am I vaccinated? That's a whole nother podcast. Am I vaccinated? If I've chosen not to be vaccinated, am I being safe, right? How can I keep myself safe and informed, but also move with it? You know, we, in a sense, we do have to move with it. Like it can't halt our life. There aren't any knowns, you know? So part of it is just knowing your triggers, like knowing when you've been talking about it too much, knowing when someone's talking about it at the table and you need to remove yourself. I've totally done that recently, right? Knowing when you're reading too much about it and when you need a break. It's very important to know what your capacity is to talk about it and to know.
Totally. Do you find that you utilize the tools that you give clients or help people with, like yourself? Do you feel that you use the tools, like anxious tools or whatever it is, for your own anxiety?
Yes. My clients know. I don't know. I'll repost this if they listen. I was just sitting with one of my clients yesterday, and she has this anxious voice that comes up, and I said, let's use some sense of humor with it. Like, oh, I see you. I see what you did there. You're creeping in. You are not invited, you know? And I totally do that, right? Like, I see you. Like, no, this is swipe up. For sure. I do that all the time, right? When you're kind of in a zone or you're somewhere and then you start having this kind of like loophole, I call it like the hamster wheel of thoughts, and you press pause, like, no, we're not going there right now. Like next, totally, to use your sense of humor. My clients know 100%. I use that as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, sorry, go ahead.
No.
So I wanted to rewind. So if there was more that you wanted to say about this, please.
I was just going to say another big piece that I work through, I think is important, especially with the young professional age, 20s and 30s, is that when our attachment style creeps up, right? And that comes up a lot with a long-term boyfriend or, you know, a lot of first dates or whatever it is, your boss texted you, can you come to my office? And you're like, oh my God, I'm done. I'm fired. Right? Like attachment just creeps up in all relationships. And something I talk about a lot that I do is trying to self-soothe. It's always our inner child creeping up of what we needed as a little kid, that even if we came from healthy homes and even if we didn't come from trauma, it's just a way that you needed to be soothed that perhaps you weren't. So a lot of what I do and when my own work and I talk with my clients is kind of picturing yourself as that 3-year-old, and what do they need, right? Do they need a hug? Do they need a pat on the back? Do they need words? So that is something that I use for myself, and I often share that with clients and they find it helpful.
Yeah. I'm obsessed.
No, like I remember there was a period of time when we started the podcast, we kept saying inner child, and like, it's kind of a funny expression when you keep saying it over and over again. It's like, I'm an adult. What is this inner child? Mm-hmm. But it really is like at the core of so much of therapy and can be a little bit like off-putting to people, like not everyone, but some people who aren't as familiar with therapy, they're like, I don't want to think about my childhood at all. But it's like, that's the whole point, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
and recognizing, oh, go ahead.
It's befriending your inner child.
Hmm. I feel like recognizing when your inner child needs something, even like as an adult, helps you stop and think about how you want to react to something. Like that's how it's helped me. And I've had to train my brain to think about, okay, what do I really need right now? Like what's really going on? And I think that many times people go around the world being anxious or upset or angry, or people can get mad at someone for something, but really it's just a disguise of like a need that's not being met.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's usually deeper than just like, why didn't you put the chips away? It's like, there's probably something deeper going on there. I mean, maybe you can be annoyed about the chips not being put away, but like if you're really upset and then turns into a screaming fight, okay, maybe there's something deeper, something else going on. And for personally, for me, being able to recognize like, okay, how does this relate to my childhood home and how things were at home for me and what I actually needed has helped me. But it's really hard to get to a place where you then can like change your behavior once you've recognized it. Mm-hmm. Right. So like you said, okay, recognizing that my inner child needed a hug. So then what would you do in that moment? Would you give yourself a hug? Like what do you do?
Well, I think, Liz, you made a good point that people don't want to go back into their childhood. And sometimes I could feel like, what, a psychoanalysis? Like, let me lay on the couch and tear it apart? Not at all. That is not what I do. That is not my framework. It's just going back there enough to gain understanding of why you're reacting mm-hmm. this way. So for a lot of single women, very often I see, you know, if they go to a single event or if they're at, you know, some type of, you know, event and they're trying to talk to this guy that isn't paying attention, and then your attachment style creeps up. Why isn't he like me? Why isn't he looking at me? Right? It's in that moment of like, okay, what do you need right now? Do you need a hug? Right? Do you need to kind of like talk to yourself? Right? Obviously not right there then talk to yourself, but it's kind of going like this to yourself. Nobody notices, right? When you're kind of just like holding yourself, but noticing that that's creeping up, right? Noticing when it's coming and filling yourself with that.
For sure. I love it.
Really interesting.
So we didn't get to this, and I know like I don't want to take too much of our time or your time, but something that I really quickly wanted to touch on was how you got into all of this and what inspired you to work in mental health to begin with. I mean, you're clearly naturally very soothing, comforting person. You're very smart. I'm not just saying that because I like you, but how did you decide that you wanted to work in this field?
Yeah, ever since I was a little girl, oh my gosh, if my mom listens to this, she'll laugh. I was always so curious about people. Like I was always a connector, you know, like I was always very curious about people's stories. And in middle school, I remember like wanting to help people with their, you know, problems. And I was always curious. Like I would ask somebody something, my mom would be like, Arhela, we don't act that. Like my mom would stop her. Like that is not, and I'd just be curious. And I genuinely like people. Like I really love people. I love unique people. I love helping people. I have a big heart. I do. I really genuinely, it's authentic. You know, it's not like sometimes I have one kid at school, this eighth grade boy a few years ago. He's like, you get paid a lot to care. I'm like, no, buddy. Like I actually care. Like I don't get paid a lot to care. I think I just was always curious. I always wanted to help.
Yeah.
I feel grateful. My clients are my biggest inspiration, and the kids at school,
that's special. I mean, you even brought them up like several times throughout the talk, which I always wonder, like with my therapist, I'm like, do you talk about me? Cause I know you can't, but like, do you ever bring me up? Like when you're talking to other clients, cause she does that with me. And I actually like really appreciate it because mm-hmm. I like knowing like there's actually like a human on the other side of this. It's not like a machine giving you advice, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I love that. This is different from what Liz was saying, but I love that you are so involved with younger kids, because looking back at my middle school years, like I don't think the guidance counselor was very involved. I don't know. I think it's so important to have someone like you in a middle school. Just those are such crucial years, and to have someone at the school that helps you feel supported and a safe place to go. Like, it's just so important. It's like one of the most important jobs.
Definitely.
You're like shaping the future.
To be a kid or a preteen or a teen in 2021 is so freaking complicated. I tell this to them. It is so, with TikTok and Instagram and social media, like it is a different world. And there's so much pressure and outside influences that there's so much that goes on in their headspace. Yeah, I love the work in school. It's so important.
Amazing.
Well, it's good on you for doing that.
Yeah.
It's such important work.
Shkoya.
Well, you guys, I just want to say before we wrap up, thank you for this platform, because it is so important. First of all, you guys are awesome. I love the name. And it's just so important to have these conversations and to normalize and for people to tune in. And, you know, maybe they're taking something away from this, or they're seeing that therapy isn't so scary and it's for the strong. Mm-hmm. It's not anything to be ashamed of. So thank you, you guys, for taking what you're passionate about and bringing it, broadcasting it, literally.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Means a lot. We do our best. We're not experts, but that's why we have people like you on.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
This is so fun.
Thank you so much for your time.
Sorry. Where can people find you? Instagram, socials?
Yes.
Plug yourself.
Yes, yes. So my handle on Instagram is ArielaAzarafLCSW. That is my Instagram, and it's that same name.com, www.ArielaAzarafLCSW.com. And that is perfect. That is my website, and you can check out different posts and reels, attempted reels. I do a lot of meditation, so yes, please check it out.
Love it.
That's awesome. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you for listening.
Shabbat Shalom. So that was our episode with Ariella. We hope you enjoyed and got all types of insight. And she had so much fabulous insight, both about like her life and how she fits her values into her therapy, but also how she like communicates with all different types of people. And we also just had a really good conversation about like therapy right now in general. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody can get a lot out of it.
Totally. And you know, it's such a funny thing because we didn't even mean to get into, I mean, I guess we did. We knew it was going to enter religious territory,
right.
But it's, I didn't even connect the dots that right now everyone is talking about my unorthodox life. And like, there's so much to say about the show. And honestly, I think it's a whole other episode, but like, there's so much to say about the mental health behind that show and the characters and what they're all feeling. And we didn't get into that at all, but it is just interesting that right now when everyone is talking about this, we had someone from the Jewish observant world come and like, you see how open she is and how warm and welcoming.
Right.
And it's just like, I hope that helps people understand how many different experiences there are within the Jewish world.
Definitely. I agree. We also hope you have a great Tuesday, a great week, that you share this episode with people. You can find us on Instagram at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod, on Twitter at It's Fine I'm Fine PD. You can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Liz Height. Sarah, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Sarah L. Sassone. I don't really post on TikTok anymore, sadly. I just don't have time. But where else? Twitter, same handle. And Twitch? No.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Musical.ly? No, that's the old TikTok.
I wish. That's pretty much it. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. And with that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Bye.